dual field series, and what are the properties of these amplitudes for region with finite boundaries. And 3D gravity is, of course, very special because there are no propagating degrees of freedom, which, however, allows us to solve it, as you will see. And in this case, we do have suitable quantum theories. And so it's an ideal testbed for many questions. So there are different approaches, and here's just an overview of the ones I will be using. So there's, of course, perturbative, and I will speak about this, I will mention a result, which starts from the Einstein-Hilbert action in metric variables, and then typically use a Wick-rotated path integral with Euclidean signature and statistical weight, so it's not really quantum, but with Wick-rotated. And indeed, in the continuum, there has been a path integral evaluation done for a certain geometry to one loop for asymptotic boundaries. And that was done by this Barnish et al. In 2015. And that was emulating something which was done in ADS way in 2008. And that motivated us to look at this in more non-perturbative approaches, and in particular for finite boundaries. And the first we did was with Ricci action, which is a discretization, but it turns out that it's basically equivalent to a continuum theory. And we could also do the one loop calculation for finite boundary and identify a linearized boundary theory. Again, that would work with a Wick-rotated, with a Wick-rotation or with statistical weights. So there's no official Wick rotation. and that opens the question, can you do a complete non-perturbative path integral? And indeed, there's a so-called Ponzano-Ricci model. So that would be 3D gravity without a cosmological constant. It has Euclidean signature, but you take actually quantum weights. So that's with a complex action a priori. and I will come to that. And that is basically, I would say, a suitable model for quantum gravity. Also, it's discrete. It's bulk triangulation invariant. It can be also made boundary triangulation invariant if you ask the right questions. As is well known, there's, of course, also Chern-Simons action for 3D gravity. And that is usually discussed in a Hamiltonian framework by combinatorial quantization. But there's also path integrals. And there's lots of work on showing the equivalences between these two different approaches in different signatures and different contexts. And I didn't put all the names because it's a huge bunch of work. Now my presentation makes sometimes these funny bars, okay. I don't see any colors, okay. so what I will be presenting here is basically these three different calculations. One is continuum metric gravity for asymptotic boundaries. The other is in Ricci gravity. And finally, for the Ponzano-Ricci model, a fully non-perturbative path integral. We can determine the exact boundary series for finite boundary. We can do an exact evaluation of the path integral for certain boundary states. And we can also do a semi-classical evaluation for special boundary states, which indeed recovers all the previous results and adds more information of what is happening in the non-perturbative realm.
I think you said that, but which value are you taking for the cosmological constant?
Here it's zero.
Zero. Okay.
You could, in principle, do also other cosmological constants and signatures. It's more involved because, for instance, it involves a quantum deformation if you do the the Ponzano-Ricci equivalence models. So let me just describe which configuration we are considering and what the corresponding classical solution in flat space. So the equation of motion, say, it's flat space. So you could say there's not so much interesting things going on. But there are topological degrees of freedom. And here you see one example. You take the flat space matrix. and take a solid cylinder here. It has a certain length, so the which will be beta, the inverse temperature. And we can identify that to a solid torus. But before we do so, we twist one end and then glue it together. So you get a so-called twisting angle gamma. It's also known as twist angle. And these two together define you the moduli parameter of this torus. And so if you want to, you can study the partition function as a function of your boundary geometry. And if you require this boundary geometry to be flat, there are only these two parameters, beta and gamma. And it's called thermal spinning flat case. There's also the equivalent for ADS. And that ADS thermal spinning flat case would be actually dual to the, or modular dual to the BTZ black hole. So what is the result? It's quite straightforward to evaluate the classical action, and that just depends on beta. And much more involved is to evaluate the one loop correction. So you can do that via heat kernel regularization, and that is basically the main point of this paper. If you look into that, it's short, but it's not very insightful. So you don't need to specify boundary conditions in the heat kernel regularization. It uses an ingenious method via images to get to this result. But you have to do various resummations, and then you get to this nice result, which turns out to be mostly divergent, which turns out, however, to be correct. So what the authors did was to introduce an additional regularization for this gamma angle. So you see that if gamma is basically rational, at some point, one of these factors will be zero. So you can ask why does that happen? So why do people think that is the right result? It turns out that you can actually recover this result with a bit of funny boundary term, namely one half of the usual, to be the character of the BMS 3 group.
Sorry, what is the
GH1? This is a Gibbons-Hawking-York square root integral over the extrinsic curvature. So here you need to take one half. You can take it. There's an additional paper just justifying this choice. You can understand it that it's a bit equivalent to Chern-Simons boundary condition. And it comes from really studying the EDS case and seeing what you get if you take the limit to the flat case. And you have to do that very carefully. And it's like in four papers of Barnish, just a bit involved. So here, so as far as I know, it has only been shown to work for these asymptotic boundary conditions. Sorry?
BMS means Bondi Mensur Sachs, right?
Yeah. So this is.
That's a symmetry of asymptotically flat space.
Yeah.
Right. So how did that get in here? Whereas I thought we were just summing over toruses.
Yeah. So this is. So implicitly, you can easily take the this radius to infinity.
Okay.
Thanks. Okay. That's all.
I mean, I don't quite see why it's flat, but I understand at least we're getting to
infinity. This is a flat metric, but okay.
Null infinity, right?
I mean, yeah, so you do have to analytically continue back beta to get this BMS character. You know this result basically because the BMS group would be basically also this limit case of the Virasoro algebra, which you get in EDS and which was identified by Brown and Hanau a long time ago. So you get this as an equivalent of that, and that EDS result told you there's a conformal theory on the boundary, and similarly, you can say there's some boundary theory behind this character of the BMS group, as basically is here.
Yeah. Do you claim that This BMS-3 is basically 2U1 that you show in the previous transparency.
No, I didn't claim. No, no. There's a non-trivial identification if you go from Minkowski to.
But to get that partial quantum, you only sum over those 2U1, or you sum.
No, I mean this is an extra talk. So you can really define the character of the BMS group, and there's a massless character, and it's exactly of this form without the 2, with an I.
So to get Z, you really sum over all inequivalent classes of BMS3, or you just sum over that 2U1?
No, this Z is a sum over is a path integral. This Euclidean path integral I've shown you. And this is the character of the BMS group. Okay.
Sorry.
So also here there's these modes turn out to be angular Fourier modes, which is not very obvious in this calculation. But it starts with p equal to 2, and you can ask why this is the case. Actually, the Rejtjeg calculation, so where you use basically a discretization and you have a discrete action and so on, gives you answers to all that. As I mentioned, it's discrete, but it turns out to be triangulation independent if you asked questions to one loop. So you, it's not, I mean, the Rejtjeg path integral, I would say, is not completely well-defined in itself, but if you just take it perturbatively, you can make sense of it to one loop. And then it's easy to do finite boundary here and to compute also the one loop determinant to finite boundary. It's just an exercise in patience, if you want. And then it turns out you get actually the same result, but with the mode cutoff. So nx is the numbers of pieces you have here. So, here you also find, if you allow perturbations of your boundary metric, a dual boundary action, which I have here. You do get the same result even for a finite boundary. The reason is a funny kind of scale symmetry for 3D gravity, which maps solutions into solutions. The first question I had on the previous slide was, why is that divergent? So here can always put the discretization so that you can accommodate any rational angle, and it's not divergent. But if you put a finite discretization, at some point it will be divergent, and that has something to do with how many cycles you need to go along a constant angle here to cover all vertical edges, because you shift. So you will have a different number of loops going around in time-like direction. And basically, the extrinsic curvature angle associated to one loop has to be constant. But if you have more than one loop, it doesn't need to be constant. And in this case, you get an ambiguity. So it means that, interestingly, for these cases, you have an additional symmetry arising for these boundary conditions, which actually is not a gauge symmetry. And this symmetry leads to this divergence. I also believe that this is actually an approximation artifact, so that it holds only for the linearized equation of motion. We will see that also in the non-perturbative evaluation, where indeed it's completely finite. And
it
actually,
to go from what into what?
This is a path, it's basically the no mount boundary amplitude, if you want. It's a no boundary amplitude. It's an integral over all matrix which fit into the given boundary matrix, which is just given in this case by all the lengths of the edges on the boundary here. So you have one boundary, which is a torus. And you take the path integral of all matrix fitting into this boundary.
So the arguments of the amplitude are the binary numbers of the torus?
The argument of this, the moduli parameter, depends on beta and gamma. Okay, and then there's some discretization choices you do, which also end up here, but are not too important. Okay, so it's basically, you can say there's no boundary, or it's actually the Wheeler-DeWitt wave function for the surface. Okay, here you also see that you see nicely that the product starts with p equal to 2, because there's a remnant of the diffeomorphic symmetry, which is given by translating the vertices in the bulk, which is shown here with these blue and red arrows. And these modes p equal to 0 and plus minus 1 actually correspond to diffeomorphism and need to be gauge fixed. So they do not end up in the determinant of the Hessian, which gives you this result. Let me just mention, this dual boundary field theory turns out to be particular Liouville type theory, so we can only find it in the linearization. It has a linear Liouville type coupling, but you will find a funny kinematic term, which however has also been found in other calculations or approaches. But what you get for free here is a bulk reconstruction, because the argument of this Liouville field is indeed just the geodesic length from a boundary point to some point in the middle. So you can kind of redefine these things, but it's basically exactly just like that. And it's also what shows up in the Rui Takanagi proposals and so on. So you get basically all this geodesic lengths as two-point functions and so on. let me maybe come to the main point of the talk. And that's a non-perturbative fast integral, which I've, which are two papers, especially with Aldo Riello, which is a postdoc here, et al. Levine from Lyon, and Christoph Göller, a student here and in Lyon. And let me just say some things about the Ponzano-Recce path integral for 3D gravity. So you can motivate it. By the way, it was kind of written down in 1968 as possibly the first model of quantum gravity, which in 3D, which was kind of, which still is alive and well. so you can motivate it, which is not the historical motivation, from the path integral for the Palatini action. And the Palatini action turns out to be linear in the E fields, which are the triads. And then you can just integrate out formally the triads. And this acts as a delta function, and that's why you need actually the complex weight. So formally, you do get just the integral over flat connections here, like you would in Chern-Simon theory. And you can regularize that on a lattice to make sense out of this. So here you would get a huge product over delta functions on each point. You can regularize that on a lattice, replacing the connection with holonomies along this lattice. Here you still get a product over delta functions. You can make that completely well-defined by gauge fixing and so on. But if you take that, which just looks quite simple, it's a bunch of delta functions, and do a variable transformation by which is a group Fourier transform. You replace the group elements with representation labels, basically. You do get a more complicated looking expression. And these are just dimension factors. These are just signs. The important thing is the 6J symbol here. That will be attached to tetrahedra if you start from a lattice which is dual to a triangulation. And this 6J symbol, you can look at it at large J, which means that the length of your tetrahedron will be much bigger than Planck length. It goes to the actually Recce action for this tetrahedra, and it goes to the exponential I Recce action plus the opposite sign. And how you have to understand it is that you take the sum over orientations of these two tetrahedra, and that's actually necessary to really have full diffeomorphism invariance, which here in this case, if you consider a subdivided tetrahedron, is given by moving this vertex around. Now you can also move this vertex outside the tetrahedron, and the full action will be still invariant under this displacement. And that's why, for instance, the sum of orientation is needed. It's somehow it's also related to positive versus negative flaps and so on. So here it's really both. And it actually means that this tetrahedron has an inside and an outside. If you just consider the surface of the tetrahedron, you actually don't know whether the bulk is inside or outside. So here you take both possibilities. So let me try to come to the main points. So it's of course very convenient to work with this formulation and not with the more complicated one, which looks more fancy. But here, as boundary states, you would only have a connection, which is not so interesting. What you want to ask is putting a metric on your boundary. And you can do that by basically taking the inner product between this functional and basically functionals of your connection. And these very convenient bases of these functionals are known as spin networks. And these would indeed diagonalize metric observables of your boundary. So they are labeled by spin representations and intertwiners, which sit at the nodes. And also you have a regular lattice. In real geometry, that might look very tilted. If you consider something with a square lattice, then you have four valent nodes. And in principle, you have four quadrangulars. But these quadrangulars can have different diagonals. And these two diagonals are real quantum degree of freedom, which means that the lengths of these two diagonals do not commute. And the reason is that there is a bit of extrinsic geometry involved. Let me just mention that here we can choose a boundary state which comes from the smallest discretization, spin 1/2. So we are really having Planck lengths just as your typical lengths. And you can easily derive a dual boundary theory, which turns out to be a six vertex model or the Heisenberg spin chain. And so here you see an interesting connection to integrable models. If you do higher spins, you just get other spin chains. And you can do an exact evaluation for fuzzy squares. So in this case, the intertwiners are especially simple. And this exact evaluation confirms the divergence structure of the BMS character in the asymptotic limit. So for finite boundaries, this is really a finite path integral. But for asymptotic boundaries, it has this interesting divergence structures, which in particular means that it does diverge for these rational angles, but not for others. So the final point will be the semi-classical evaluation of this path integral. And the techniques which we used are heavily used and developed in the loop quantum gravity community. But mostly for one building block. So the point here is to use it for an entire lattice. Here I'm not going to explain lots of details because I'm out of time. So what is used are so-called coherent intertwiners. So what is coherent is just the intertwiners, degree of freedoms. And what you need to remember here is that these are written as integrals themselves with a group integral, which will be associated to the nodes of the lattice. And this allows us to consider something really squares, which are geometrically squares and somehow coherently so. The easy part is to integrate out the flat bulk connection. And using these states, you do get something which you, unfortunately, there are some colors here which are not visible. You do get something which you can take as dual boundary theory because it's defined on the boundary. So you integrate over group elements associated to the vertices of your boundary lattice. And actually, it's a potential for a flat connection. You have an action. It looks a bit involved, but it's basically a sigma-like model. And then there are some definitions here which just describe this spatial geometry of the boundary. So these group elements appear and give you basically a connection on the boundary, which is flat. What is non-trivial is just this insertion of this. That's also essentially a holonomy, which is one non-trivial holonomy which you can have for the solid torus, which goes basically in this direction. You have a non-contractible cycle. That will give you basically one non-trivial group element here.
The groups are permutation groups or something like that?
No, the group is the SU2. Sorry.
For the vertices on say, the tetrahedron?
These groups are always SU2. Well,
Lorentz group.
The Euclidean, yeah, Lorentz group. So they come from the Palatini action. If you rewrite it, you can identify the triad with an SU2 Lie algebra element. And so the connection would be SU2 valued. And that's where it's coming from. So this boundary theory is exact because we didn't do any approximation here. But what you now can do is to do a semi-classical evaluation of this path integral with this rather involved-looking action. It's high-dimensional. G is three-dimensional, and you have one G for every vertex. And you have this phi. And what we do is indeed the semi-classical evaluation. For this, you need to scale these spins to be large because they just multiply the action. And so you consider basically settle point equations for this action. What it basically does is we did fix the internal intrinsic geometry of the boundary. What these solutions for G and phi provide you is extrinsic curvature ingots. And mathematically, all kinds of embeddings of the surface into flat space, because the equation of motion are flat space. So in this sense, the solution to the settle point equation reconstructs the bulk geometry.
How many solutions are there?
Yeah, so that's the next slide. So there's the one solution you expect, which I haven't drawn here because it's so boring, which would be just that you do get the one which we had before, the classical background solution. But now we do work with holonomies. And for that reason, making a 2-pi rotation or 4-pi or an 8-pi does not matter. So you get all windings here. You get also kind of negative windings, negative n, which you just have to see as this orientation change. Another thing which is not so nice are these foldings, where your boundary goes straight and then turns 180 degrees and then goes back and then goes straight again, goes back again. So these are solutions to your theory. We didn't look further into this because evaluating the determinant for the Hessian is a bit painful already. And here you can't use the Fourier transform, which we need to use. Also, as before, as in the Recce case, for this linearized equation, you find a non-uniqueness for solutions if you have this condition satisfied, which has something to do with how many vertical windings you need to cover your lattice. and so we will see basically the similar structure for the one-loop determinant, because that has to basically, this determinant has to blow up every time or be zero. So the inverse blows up every time you have ambiguous solutions. And so the result is in principle that you take the sum over all saddle points here. I only included the winding ones. N equal to 0 is also a classical solution, but it doesn't contribute due to the measure. So n equal to 0 would be where your torus is a bit degenerate, actually very degenerate. You do get, in principle, the right action, which turns out to be a sign because the spins are discrete. You do get the same one loop determinant as a function of gamma only, as before, for n equal to 1. For the other ends, you do get something which is actually reminiscent of a massive BMS character. But for n equal to 1, you also find that it starts at p equal to 2, as before. So that's nice. This we did compute is an ugly expression. What you can say is that you find this condition again, which tells you that the entire amplitude is actually real. So that just is a condition that, that indeed you can interpret negative winding as an orientation change. And it's in principle dominated by n equal to 1. So this absolute value is the largest for n equal to 1. But unfortunately, something else is larger. And it's the other extreme value which you need to consider here. And the reason is an approximate symmetry which holds for n x half, which comes from a very degenerate configuration. If you have a degenerate configuration, it typically happens that you have more symmetries. And this symmetry means an ambiguity in the solution, so your determinant is 0, and that's why it blows up here. We do believe that can be kind of cured if you consider more inhomogeneous boundary conditions, but it has to be checked. Just I want to come to the end, hopefully. So we did a semi-classical evaluation of a fully non-perturbative path integral for a quite complicated involved geometry, which indeed required lots of work, mostly done by my nice collaborators. we do indeed gain this classical background, but we do find all kinds of quantum backgrounds, and you can trace back certainly the reasons for these. The orientation one is the most harmless one. The windings come from really considering holonomies instead of a connection. Now, the winding ones you can interpret as an insertion of a Planck mass particle. we find the dual boundary field theory non-linearly. And the interesting thing is that the Ponzano regime path integral, you can make it completely finite. But nevertheless, we reproduce these divergences, which for finite boundaries are really an artifact of the approximation. But on the other hand, you can show that you have to expect that to come again with asymptotic boundary conditions. so we have these contributions from additional quantum backgrounds. An interesting question, can these be suppressed by modifying the boundary state? And what we have seen is that these additional contributions come mostly because you have you put no information about the extrinsic curvature whatsoever. And they actually are distinguished by having really discrete different values in the extrinsic curvature. So the question is, can you a bit add information on this? Or actually really work with fully coherent states? Because you could argue that classically we do have information or what is inside and what is outside, and possibly just be left with one contribution if you don't like the other ones. But what we have seen is that we can look at different path integral methods and their evaluations and nicely get lots of convergence of results, but also differences. Here, we did this fully non-perturbative path integral and could do a semi-classical evaluation and also find interesting effects. I think, apart from that, the most interesting connection is the one to the BMS group, where we have to indeed better understand the role of this beam S group in the boundary field theory. Thank you. So the Ponzano Ricci model was originally defined on a triangulation, and
yeah,
indeed,
but you just need, it doesn't depend on which one you use.
Yeah, that's what I said, and so what we used.
So you just need basically one tetrahedron.
No. You need at least as many as fine your boundary geometry is. So the point here of, for instance, finding the BMS character is that you know the result you get. Here is a product over all modes. If you only take three tetrahedra, you have only three modes, you wouldn't see much. So
that's my confusion. I thought it was independent of the triangulation.
It's bulk independent. It's independent of the bulk triangulation. The boundary triangulation, you can ask the question which is independent of the boundary triangulation. If you fix the connection, it's also independent of the boundary. If you want to put a metric, that's the opposite to ask from what the solution of the Wheeler-DeWitt equation is, and then you do put, then it depends on the triangulation. In this sense, you know, that's almost one, and in the amplitude. So that's where this dependence shows up. Thanks for asking.
I have a question about the BMS group. The BMS group is really a symmetry of classical space-time, and here you have a quantum space-time. So presumably, there should be a quantum analog of the BMS group, which goes deeper. That, do you have any idea what it is and how to find it?
Yeah, in principle, it would be the it's not the Hamiltonian constraint, but the diffeomorphism constraints on the boundary, which preserves the boundary. In this case, there's basically the question, this diffeomorphism constraints would move the vertices, so they do change the triangulation. So you have to make a bit sense out of that.
Would it be possible to write down what is the quantum algebra that...
Yeah, that's what the project is, kind of. I mean, that's what we want to do at some point. And then the question is to do it at finite boundary and take the limit, basically. But here's a chance because we do have a consistent hypersurface deformation algebra in principle for this theory. So the question is to find the right sub algebra.